So, I've been working, as many of you will know, with the Climate and Energy Realists of Queensland for the last few months, and I'm absolutely delighted that David Denham and Neil Killian are here this morning to share with all of us some of the work that they've been working on. The presentation that David's going to share with us is one that we want to get out to the wider community. So in here, we're all converted, okay? We're all on side. But what we want to do is be able to get this message out to what I call Middle Australia, so that they can begin to understand how much water's been pulled over their eyes. So when you see the presentation, if you know of any organisations that would benefit from seeing that, perhaps you could introduce him in there to give him some more speaking opportunities. Some of the work that we've been doing at Climate and Energy Realists is we put together the CO2 fact sheet. CO2 is not the villain. There's copies of this over on the side if you want to take them, hand them out, share them, spread the word. And Climate and Energy Realists also meet once a month on a Sunday afternoon at 5 p.m. at the Burley Senior Citizens Club. And I do announce those in this meeting. So the next one is on the 12th of February. And we have two terrific truthers speaking to us at that event. One is a guy called Ben Beattie from Brisbane, and the other is a guy called Kevin Loffrey, who's from Ballina. And they are both very knowledgeable gentlemen. And part of that discussion will be a discussion. It won't just be people talking at you. It will be an integrated discussion. So without any further ado, David, and I've been working with David, as I said, for the last 4 or 5 months. He's a very, very knowledgeable gentleman about what's actually going on. He's done the research, he's got the figures, and a lot of the graphs, as you'll see when he shows you, they're showing us this much of the graph and this much of it there. So he's going to help to arm us with information. So when we're having conversations with other people and they believe the climate emergency and they believe the climate change and the global warming stuff, you'll have some information from today that you can take away to be better armed in having those conversations with people. So we do need to give David some time to talk because he has got about an hour long presentation and we don't want him to rush too much through that. So David, would you like to come and take the floor?
Thanks very much. I do apologise for just having this static display. Well, thank you very much for having me anyway. Can you hear me? Is that okay?
Yeah.
About the right volume. I won't go into a major introduction. Deb has done enough for me. I'd rather use the time in trying to give you a little bit of the history and the story of this thing called anthropogenic cause global warming, which we've all been beaten around the ears with rhetoric for the last 32 years. And I believe it's one of the most dangerous lies that's been foisted on humanity, certainly in my existence, but I can't see anything in history. But it's not just that it even comes close to it. It's not just in this essence, but it's how it's been used as a tool to actually control all of our futures and our grandchildren, and it terrifies me. And from what I've heard this morning, I think we're pretty much all on the same page. So what I'd like to do is because I've only got about sort of 50-odd minutes, is I'll give you a sort of speed version of it because it is such a long and complex story. But first of all, I'd just like to read just these couple of quotes for you. It'll give you some background. The whole thing evolved probably from the Club of Rome meeting in 1975, which was the United Nations, Rockefellers, Rothschilds, J.P. Morgan, those sort of people. Now, of course, Vanguard and BlackRock, they're all part of it. And they're a terrifying group of people. But they are really the background and the driving force behind all of this. The United Nations is really only their tool. And so I'll just read you a couple of quotes to give you an idea. Take, for example, this report titled The First Global Revolution, published by the Club of Rome in 1991. This is 1 year after the first report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change came out, which contains the following little gem. In searching for a new enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine and the like would fit the bill. All these dangers are caused by human intervention. The real enemy then is humanity themselves. And this has become its driving force, how to reduce our population and how to control us. It's quite terrifying. The IPCC, which is the Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change, which I'm sure you'd all be aware of, was formed in 1988, and their first report came out in 1990. They've only put six assessment reports out, the last being in 2021. But if this one, I think, is a classic. This is more recently from an interview in 2015 with Christiana Figueres. She's the Executive Secretary of the UN's Framework Convention on Climate Change, so a fairly senior woman, where she admitted that, and this is quoted, "The goal of environmental activists is not to save the world from ecological calamity, but to destroy capitalism," adding, "This is probably the most difficult task we have ever given ourselves, which is to intentionally transform the economic development model for the first time in human history," which is terrifying. But this is the whole point of the exercise. I'll just give one more quote. So the IPCC was formed as a tool with one objective, and that was to prove that anthropogenic caused carbon dioxide was actually changing the temperature of the planet to catastrophic levels. It had an objective, and its only reason for being formed was to collect scientists, pay them vast amount of money to prove it. And you get the situation in the, their first report came out in 1990, which I'll go through. They're pathetic little pieces of science for you in a moment. But what's interesting is if you read, this came out in about the mid to late 1990s, I think after the second report. The consensus of the large group of scientists assigned with assessing the proposed effects agreed in their summary of the main chapter. Don't worry too much about all that. And this is the quote. "None of the studies cited above has shown clear evidence that we can attribute the observed climate changes to the specific cases of increases in greenhouse gases." Now, this was from all the assessing scientists. They virtually said, "We cannot prove that this is the case." Now, this is from the scientists, but of course, that's not what we read as the public. They have a top-level group, a bunch of people, which put together what is actually given to the people. And at that time, this was stated by the lead author, Santa, his name was, and what he put out in response to that, "There is evidence of an emerging pattern of climate responses to forcing by greenhouse gases and sulfate aerosols from the geographically seasonal and vertical patterns of temperate changes. These results point towards a human influence on global climate." So in fact, he made up a total lie, and that is what was fed to the public. So that is what we're combating, and it really is terrifying. I'll start with this graph. This is a graph which is accepted by all the scientists. And basically what it is, it goes back 400 or 600 million years and shows the relationship of carbon dioxide, which is the black line, and the temperature of the planet, which is the blue line. And this is done from isotopes in the soil, etc., and it's accepted. It shows that carbon dioxide and our temperature now are at a very low point together. It's only happened once before in history, and that was 300 million years ago. You can see that carbon dioxide does its own thing, and the temperature and carbon dioxide don't really coincide at all. And you can also see that the normal temperature of our planet through our history was around 23 degrees centigrade, which is a lovely warm temperature. We wish sort of we could all live in that. Our current average temperature now is 13.9 degrees. Now, obviously, the poles wouldn't exist at that temperature, but the planet was a beautiful tropical environment, nothing to be frightened of. At the moment, we're in a whole series of ice ages, and these are caused by our circle around the sun, the tilt of the planet, and plus other there's other factors involved, including how our ice evolves in the top and the bottom of this planet. So I'll keep talking if you like and take questions at the end if that's okay. Someone just had their hand up, and I'd like to leave room at the end for questions. So The first report that the IPCC came out with was the hockey stick, and this was came out by Professor Michael Mann. It went back over 1,000 years from tree ring samples and tried to show that this is the blue line is the temperature of the planet, and carbon dioxide is the driving force, and whooshed up in the industrial age, just in the last 100 years or so, it took off. And he has been berated by scientists all over the planet, and he's taken two of them to court. In both cases, it was thrown out because he refused to give his scientific material that he used to justify this graph. Interestingly, this graph has stayed in the IPCC for 30 years. A year ago, it was finally pulled. So they very quietly removed it. It's a lie. It doesn't exist. And I'll show you why. This is going back over 10,000 years, and you can see, and there's quite a few graphs that have this representation, and you can see we're going back through, there's the medieval warming, there's the Roman warming, we go back through the Minoan warming, which is around the Greeks, and back into these early warming periods of 5,000 and 8,000 years ago, which is when civilization really began on this planet. Here is, if you can see that, here is Michael Mann's little hockey stick over 1,000 years, and he left out the whole of the medieval warming. And we know the medieval warming existed because at that time the Vikings were farming Greenland and they were growing barley and wheat. Today we cannot grow barley and wheat in Greenland, it's too cold. So we know it was at least 1 degree warmer than it is today. Going back over previous periods, we know that the Danish Meteorological Institute came out in 2021 with the acceptance and evidence that from 5,000 to 8,000 years ago, the planet was 2 to 4 degrees centigrade warmer than it is now. And this, all of this was with no changes of carbon dioxide. This is what carbon dioxide was doing. It was a dead level. So all of these temperature changes were happening without any change in carbon dioxide, and the IPCC cannot explain this. They have no methodology to explain it. They talk about volcanic activity and things like that. In fact, right here, there was a massive volcano which happened, I think, in Indonesia. I forget the name of it. And that probably accelerated. Which one was that? No.
Tor, another one. Tor or something.
No, it wasn't. But it was a monster. It was way bigger than either of those two. And it probably accelerated this fall, which was already happening, and put us in the little ice age where for nearly 500 years, with about 300 right in the middle, one third of the population of the planet died from starvation and cold. And we'll get to there at the end of my little talk, but I hate to tell you, a lot of the scientists reckon that's exactly where we're going now. Mm-hmm. Not to an ice age, but to a mini ice age, and I'll explain why in a second. So that was their first piece of major evidence. Over the first decade of their formation, all through the 90s, they created these models which purported to show that the relationship between carbon dioxide and temperature change was happening. There is no empirical science. It does not exist. Now, if you had Malcolm Roberts here before Christmas, he would have told you, because he certainly told us, that the first thing he did when he became a senator was demand of the CSIRO evidence, empirical evidence, that man-made carbon dioxide was changing the climate of the planet. They were unable to do it. So it has never been tested in the Parliament of Australia that this science existed. They put forward a few little papers. One was Harries, Feldman, Murcott, and there was one other. These papers were torn apart, they were demolished, and they were withdrawn because it is a crime to mislead Parliament. And that's what they would have done if they'd been left there. So there is no science that the CSIRO can produce this actual relationship between man-made carbon dioxide and temperature change exists. It does not. So, and we've got classic real science. This is from Max Planck and Karl Schwarzschild, which goes back to the early part of this of last century, where they proved, and this is accepted even by the IPCC, that if you double the amount of carbon dioxide, it will only cause a tiny amount of increase in temperature. This is carbon dioxide. All the warming from carbon dioxide comes in the first 20 parts per million. In this, they have actually proved that currently at 400 parts per million, we're getting a greenhouse effect of carbon dioxide, and it is a minor greenhouse gas, of 274 watts per square meter is reflected back onto the planet. It's not much, it sounds like a lot, but it's only a tiny, tiny amount. We get thousands more watts from cloud and water vapor. They said if you double the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, it will only add 3 watts. So if we go to 800 parts per million, instead of 274 watts, whoops, we'll only get 277 watts. So, and the reason why is because water vapor, and even the IPCC recognizes, water vapor controls everything on this planet. This is the absorption factor of the absorption spectrum of water. There's the absorption spectrum of carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide. You can see how much more effective this is. This is the radiative of heat. This is the heat that is reflected back onto the planet by water, which is that one. There's carbon dioxide, there's methane, and there's nitrous oxide. So everything on our planet is caused by water. It is the most effective global warming greenhouse gas that we've got. But even better than that, it is also keeps our planet cool, because it acts like an umbrella when the clouds are out. I mean, you would have walked across a paddock or been outside. A cloud comes over the sun, you immediately feel cooler. But it warms us as well, because it has the ability to absorb thermal energy, whereas carbon dioxide has no ability to absorb thermal energy. It takes in a photon of heat and disperses it immediately. It can't hold on to it. So it is a pathetic global warming gas. So unfortunately, it's all that the IPCC had to go on, and naturally they were paid vast amounts of money to prove that this was happening. So these little faint lines are all their modelling, if you can see that there. And the red line is the average of all of the IPCC modelling. These lines down here are balloon temperatures of the planet. They're temperatures taken by satellites of a planet. So this is accurate. When you look at actual changes, the modelling fails by a factor of as little as 4 and as much as 7 times what is actually happening. Now if you made a scientific model of something and it failed by 50%, you'd discard it, you'd throw it out. They've got modelling which is failing by a factor of 700%. And they're still screaming from the rooftop saying we're all going to die. So that is the reality of their modelling.
We are all going to die one day.
Sorry? Yeah, so that was, all of that sort of came out over the first 3 assessment reports, which were 1, 2, and 3. At that time, the planet had actually stopped warming. We went through a period where the planet just wasn't warming at all from 1997 to 2015. They called it the pause, while carbon dioxide was going through the roof. But so they were getting a bit frantic, so they changed the name. Instead of global warming, they changed it to climate change, because it was so much easier to look at a cyclone or a bushfire or a flood or something like that and point at that and saying, look, this is what's happening, which is disgusting. I'm going to touch on that briefly because anyone who knows anything about science knows that the droughts, for example, have nothing to do with the temperature of the planet. They're caused by the oceanic flows and hot waters like the Pacific Meridian or El Nino, like the subtropical current, like the, the Indian Ocean Dipole. All of these currents create our weather. Like right now, we're in a La Nina, where at our side of the Pacific, it's warm. So that's evaporating the ocean and we're getting plenty of cloud cover, which I'm going to go into a bit later. On the other side of the ocean, it's much cooler. So there's less evaporation, less cloud, so it's actually allowing more sun to penetrate on the west coast of America, and they're getting bushfires and things like that. That's been going on now for a couple of years. Please at the end. But in the AR4, which is the fourth assessment report, they came up with they were desperately looking for anything then. So they went to, these are the Vostok ice cores, and you show these temperatures there, and this is carbon dioxide, the red ones, and they appear to coincide. Unfortunately for them, there were many, many really accomplished scientists all over the planet also studying these Vostok ice cores. And what they found, yes, there was a relationship between temperature and between carbon dioxide, but unfortunately, the carbon dioxide rises came from as little as 400 years up to 5,000 years after rises in temperature. So carbon dioxide changes either going up or down after temperature change, not before it. So therefore, carbon dioxide could not possibly be causing the temperature to change, because temperature change was happening first. So, which kind of shot that one down in flame. The next report they had was the AR5 report, where they thought, look, we've got to do something. You know, we're really losing the argument here. So then they came up with this report and said, yep, well, we're definitely warming and the oceans are rising and we're all going to drown, basically. And they said from their modelling that the oceans during this century that we're in now would go up between 520 mil and 980 mil. It didn't matter to them that over the last 140 years we have static displays. We have places like Fort Denison, which is the middle of Sydney Harbour, and is on stable rock. It's not rising, it's not sinking. And these are the Fort Denison rises over from 1886 up to 2006. And yes, there is sort of average rises. There's about 48 mil from the two averages. That's over 120 years. That's that much. That's not very much, is it? But even when you take static ones, like there's Port Arthur down in Tasmania, we've got the docks in Scotland and Aberdeen, there's the Ross Lemprea mark in the UK, there's all of these static marks all over the world, and there's hundreds of them, about 1 to 1.3 mil rise over the last 140 years per year. So that's a total in a century of about 4 to 5 inches. And there is no sign of that actually getting worse. In fact, it's getting less. One of my heroes is a guy called Professor Nils Axel Mohler, who's probably one of the greatest oceanographers on the planet. And he has been doing work in the Maldives and the Marshall Islands. He's been taking raw data from all the satellites, which is the Grace gravitational satellites and others like that, and the Phoenix Topex ones. And he has found that in the last 25 years, he's saying there is virtually no rise in the oceans at all. And you've also got studies from Auckland University, from aerial photography of the Pacific for 25 years. They have shown, and where they can actually measure the areas, all of the islands and all of the land in the Pacific, that 14% of them actually shrunk, which would mean maybe a rising ocean. But all of those ones were attributed to mostly storms or things like that where they've lost some land area. 43% of them hadn't changed at all, and 43% of them have actually grown in size. So even all the islands of the Pacific, on average, are getting bigger rather than smaller. And this included Tuvalu, which has been proven to have grown by 3.5%. And they took $1 billion off us at the last Pacific Forum that Scott Morrison gave them. So, I mean, it's a joke. So we're not going to drown, which is the good news. So that was AR5. So AR6, which came out in 2021, had no new science in it at all. They just used a lot of code red, catastrophic, you know, just a lot of language and rhetoric to terrify us all, but actually no signs at all. But if you look at actually all the temperatures, this is one of the things that has also been found. This is from the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Agency, NOAA, which is one of the biggest collection data of temperature of the planet and survives a lot of its information to the IPCC. Here's one that they actually printed. There's their data, and you look at from 1934 to 1935, and this was done at about 2000. This is the same graph, the identical graph, that was printed in 2020. Look at the change. They've just falsified it. Just totally changed it. And this is an even better one. This is NASA. And these graphs are taken from newspapers. So they're old graphs, they're the same graph. But this is the change. So we had the planet during the 1930s was much hotter, in fact, or at least as hot as it is today. So this gold graph was a graph that came out in 1974. So it stopped there. Okay? There's the same graph. In what's the black one is, where's that one? Oh, 1981. Oh, they shrunk it. Because at 1981, they thought, oh look, it's showing it a bit more. So they adjusted it in 1981, so it was a bit less. The next one that came out is the red graph, which is 2001. They shrunk it some more, and they elevated the current temperatures. And then the latest one, which is 2017, which is the blue one, they've even shrunk the 30s more, and look what they've done to our current temperatures. And these are the same graphs, just put out at different times. So you can see the manipulation of what they've done, which is disgusting. And if we look at more temperature graphs, in the Australian BOM, the Bureau of Meteorology, has supposedly altered 300 of our temperatures all over Australia. And even NOAA has got us not cooling at all over the last 10 years. In fact, as I think we were discussing earlier on, you'll find that actually not warming at all. We have in fact been cooling. But this is Will Canyon. From 1881 to 2022, it's pretty much a flat line. Mm-hmm. And this is the path of carbon dioxide. There's other ones I've seen, like Rutherglen, Wilson's Promontory. All the little ones that are dotted that are not near what's called urban heat zones. So most of our temperatures taken in all over the world, the thermometers are in cities. So you imagine with all that bitumen and concrete, and as the cities are growing, it's making the cities warmer and warmer. So, and a lot of the ones, they're trying to do it with temperatures in the middle of the oceans, which they take on ships. Now, can you imagine trying to take a temperature on a steel ship out in the sunlight? How are you going to get an accurate temperature from a ship? So, the whole thing, it's just not, well, we're not warming at all, basically. We haven't been. We're warming a little bit, but not a lot, and certainly within natural parameters, which I'll get onto in a second. So we get to the end of the IPCC. Its science, as I think you can see, is not very compelling. So we should look around us then. because the IPCC has been predicting that we're all dying and we're all going to die and we're going to drown or we're going to burn in hell or something or other. It's getting pretty scary. And that's the message that our children and grandchildren are being given, which really pisses me off. It's the one thing that makes me honestly very angry, is our kids are not sleeping, you know, because they're being terrified by their teachers. So let's look at the world. Let's see what's actually happening. This is hurricanes in the USA from 1850 through to 2020. So you've got your category 5, which is the blue ones, and 4 downwards, etc., as the colors vary. You can see that they're dropping. So cyclones, hurricanes down. It's exactly the same with the Australia, by the way, with our cyclones. Here's another thing. This is US forest area burned 1926 to 2017. This is what that shows. Right? Looks terrifying, yeah. A lot more bushfires. This is where it came from. That's the reality. Yeah, there's a few more there and things like that. There's been quite a few El Ninos which have made the coast quite dry, and even the La Ninas, they're still getting bushfires there now. But they do selective pruning of all their grass. What's happening in the Northern Hemisphere with our ice cap? This is our ice cap from 2011 to 2022. You can see it's going along quite well. And in fact, over the last year, which is the red one, we're actually even higher. We're right in the thick of it. So there was an Al Gore, that's right, who said summer ice in the Northern Hemisphere will be gone by 2013. Well, according to this, it's not. And this comes from the Danish. This comes from the Danish Meteorological Institute. Even worse. This is June. I call June mid-summer in the Northern Hemisphere. This is the ice in June last year. That is 7 meters to 20 meters thick. That is the Northern Ice Cap. There were 27 ships which were trapped inside that because it was surprisingly so much more ice than they expected. So this comes from Russia, by the way. You won't find it on your TV or in your newspapers. This one I had to get from Russia. So I mean, you can see where there's Greenland, there's Alaska, this is Siberia and Russia, and these ones, there's Norway. So there's a little bit of saleable area around there, but you couldn't even sail to Vostok or any of those places around there. So, there's nothing wrong with the Northern Hemisphere. In fact, the Jacobs Haven ice flow, it's probably one of the biggest, the biggest flows of ice in the Northern Hemisphere in Greenland. It's been growing regularly. Now for 5 years, which is really surprising NASA as well as everyone else. So now this is all right. These guys are good to go for. This is the Finnish Meteorological Institute. These are combined snow volumes for the Northern Hemisphere for this is 2022, and you can see the red line massively in excess of the average, which is the blue line. So there's plenty of snow, and I think if you read your news at all, you'll know exactly what's happening. The skiing and the snow in the Northern Hemisphere, there are people dying in Kashmir, dying in Russia because of the excess snow. If I have time, I can hit you with a few of these current ones. But I'll go through. This is the Southern Hemisphere, so this is the Antarctic. It has been growing from 1980 to 1920. We've had a drop here, but this is the La Nina. Now all it is the warm currents that have gone down and they're flowing past Antarctica. It's coming back again. It's back up to the average as the La Nina is beginning to weaken. But all that is the pack ice around the edges has been dropping off a bit, but the temperatures in Antarctica aren't. In 2021, at the Scott Armistead base, the Antarctic recorded its lowest temperature ever recorded since they had thermometers in the Antarctic, and it recorded its coldest 6 months ever. Both of those temperatures were reflected again in 2022. It's freezing down there. So this little dip here is only the warmer currents from the La Nina. So it is basically, the Antarctic has been growing consistently for 40 years. So that's okay. There we're doing all right as well too. Oh, by the way, you've got other corroborating things. There's that cold temperature. This is at the Armistead base. And there's the temperatures from 1957. And there's that temperature they got in 2021. There's other agencies like Kalt Sond, which is a German recording and correlating weather and climate agency. And they have estimated that the vast eastern shelf of the Antarctic has cooled by 2.8 degrees centigrade over the last 40 years, and the vast western shelf has cooled by 1.6 degrees on average. So far I'd say our planet is doing okay. We are certainly not showing any signs of this dramatic warming. You all must have seen it, where it only created one pinpoint of news, but our barrier reef is back up to levels that they've never seen before. Yeah. We've got greater areas now in the barrier reef than we've had since they started recording temperatures in, when was it, 1985, I believe it was. And we've had a few areas where it's dropped off. We've had cyclonic events, and we've also had Star of Thorns events. But basically the reef is as healthy as hell. I'm a diver, so I've been diving regularly on it for the last 40 years, and it's fine. One of the things, of course, they talk about the barrier reef, but what they talk about is all of the inside, which is only 30 metres deep of water, sometimes only 30 feet deep of water, with the odd bommy and the odd island. The real reef is out on the outside, which is on the edge of the continental shelf. That has never been in dire straits. It is in absolutely magnificent condition, and always has been. So much for the reefs. So going back to some of the stuff, this is just another temperature record which has not been adulterated. And this is from 1895 through to 2015. And this is the occurrence of record high temperatures over the United States of America. You can see that very hot time around the 1930s that I was talking about, which happened in Australia as well. But you can see I wouldn't call that terrifying at all. And the most interesting thing, and this comes from a site called Climate at a Glance. Anyone can go into it. It's the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Agency. And you can go into Climate at a Glance, and you can plug in any country, any landmass, any timing, whether you want just land temperatures or land, ocean and air. So this is all the, in 2003, they noticed that all the weather stations in America, whereas they used to be in the middle of barley fields or something, were now in car parks, just the back of a Chinese restaurant exhaust fan or something like that. So they did 114 state-of-the-art new weather stations in good situations, well clear, out of urban heat zones, and they installed them all over the continental USA. So they came online in 2005, which is from there up until, when did I get one? Well, there's January 2022 there. So this is the continental USA ever since they had state-of-the-art stations. I don't see any warming there at all. You can see all the ups and downs, and you can see the El Ninos and things like that, but to me that looks pretty normal. So that's continental USA, and I've always said that the USA is probably one of the best places to look at because it's surrounded by the two big oceans. It's a big landmass, and it would be a very good pinpoint of what's happening in the Northern Hemisphere. And according to NOAA, if you look at it, it's not cooling at all. But here's another one at NOAA. We got a big El Nino in end of 2015-16. We got another one in 19 here. But according to NASA and according to NOAA, from 2016, which is here, to February 2022, which is when I took this one off, we've been cooling. So the planet is actually beginning to cool. And in fact, when you look at that, this is an extract from NASA. NASA sees climate cooling trend thanks to low sun activity. This is from NASA. The Earth is actually cooling. Global temps continue, century record plunge, despite rising CO2 emissions. So even NASA is recognising that our planet is cooling. And yet, this is 2018, in 2021, the IPCC came up with their last report and said it is code red, we are having catastrophic warming. So you are being fed absolute lies. So what is actually happening with our planet currently? Why we are getting things. We're getting floods, we're getting all sorts of events. And in actual fact, NASA, there is an explanation for all of these things. And NASA knows that you won't see it on your mainstream media news at 6 o'clock. What it is we are going through all of the temperature of the planet. I'm going to start here. The temperature of the planet, what they have discovered, is affected a lot by sunspot activity. During the mini ice age, or the little ice age of the 1600s, was really low sunspot activity. And there it is there. And this is, we've been measuring sunspot activity for 270 years. Galileo first noticed them, which is way back here somewhere. So we've been aware of sunspot activity. And you'll see that the temperature, which is this black line, and that's sunspot activity, which is the blue lines. The sunspot activity happens in an 11-year cycle. We don't know why, it just does. And it's been, since we've been measuring it for 270 years, it never misses a beat. It's always an average of 11-year cycles. And we are now, we had a really high sunspot activity through the 1900s, up until about sunspot number 24, which finished at about 2015. We are now in the middle of sunspot cycle number 25, and it's a really low one. And the prediction is we are heading for an even lower set of sunspot cycles, and which could even mean that NASA is saying to another little mini ice age. So we're actually going to be facing colder and colder temperatures. Now, I don't know about you, but I've noticed in the last 5 years it has been getting colder and colder. I mean, we had Sydney in 2021 have its coldest temperature ever recorded in April, or its coldest April ever. We had Sydney last year in 2022 never exceed 30 degrees Celsius for the first time since temperatures ever were taken. So Sydney never got above 30 degrees centigrade for the whole of 2022. I mean, you look at this month, we're in January. Yeah, it's hot up here. And by the way, the heat you're feeling, the warmth from the high humidity, it's another proof of what I was saying before, is water can hold this heat, and always in humid areas, you will feel hotter when it's humid. You go down to Melbourne, which has a drier temperature, might have the same temperature, you don't feel nearly as hot. But I'll just retract a little bit. One of the things about water which is unique is you go anywhere over the planet and they can be on similar latitudes. If you have a super dry climate, like an arid desert, you're going to get these massively high temperatures. Whereas when you have a humid temperature or a humid climate, the temperature changes are much less. So what cloud does is modify the temperature of the planet. A, it keeps us warm, and B, it also cools us down. So it doesn't matter what's happening in terms of greenhouse gases or global warming, the clouds will always look after us. If it gets too hot, will you get a little bit more cloud? and it provides a beautiful umbrella, plus it evaporates. Because clouds have this amazing ability to go from water to gas, in a water state to gas, and it takes up energy, it takes energy, with no additional change of temperature. It also goes from ice to water, which also absorbs energy. So the clouds are what keep us just spot on. It's this sort of stuff which is changing the temperature of the planet. It's these changes in sunspot activity. And I'll show you why. What actually happens, when you get very low sunspots, the magnetic field of our planet gets less and less, because it's from the sunspot explosions on the sun that we get all our charged particles hit the Earth and increase our big magnet, which is the planet Earth. So what happens is, when you've got a lot of sunspot activity and the magnet's really strong, the polar jet stream, which actually wraps around both, there's lots of jet streams, but the polar jet stream, which wraps around the top and the bottom of the planet, they're full of charged particles. So they get drawn towards the two poles, north and south. What that does is allow a lot of heat to come away from the equator towards the poles, and it gives us warmer temperatures over our planet generally. When the sunspot activity is low, the magnet becomes less, so the jet stream moves towards the equator, but it does it in a wavy line called a meridional flow, or what's called a polar vortex. What that does is that brings cold weather either down from the north or up from the southern poles in those waves, and to give us these very cold temperatures. But because it's wavy, you can still get heat coming down from the equator, for example, or heat coming up from the equator, depending on which hemisphere. So you'll get the situation where you've got fires in California or fires in Greece. Remember when we had those? Because it would have been a bulge like that, taking the hot air up from the equator, but right next to it, which they don't tell you, while we had those fires in Greece, this was in midsummer, it was snowing in Austria. They were having a massive cold spell in France, which destroyed 60% of its wine crop. In America, while you had the fires in California, hop over the mountains to the Wyoming wheat belt, and you found that they lost 40% of all their wheat that year due to cold snaps. So again, they don't tell you that. You're only being fed bits of information. But all of this is out there, and NASA totally understands it. So that's why we're getting this odd weather that we're having. But there's one other effect which I think is very important. When the magnetic sphere of the planet shrinks and dissipates, and so it becomes a weaker planet, we get a much bigger impact of cosmic rays, because it is the magnetic field around the Earth. But when the cosmic rays come, the cosmic rays are deflected around our planet. When our magnet is weak, these cosmic rays hit us. Now they do two things. They have two symptoms which are going to be very familiar. First of all, they stimulate the silica in magma, which causes much more volcanic and earthquake activity. Now you go back over the last 5 years, look at Hung Gatora, look at, what was it, the Canary Islands, some of the volcanoes we've had that have just been going off like crackers all over the planet. This is why they're being stimulated by these cosmic rays. But it has another effect too. It does, when it hits cloud, it nucleates the cloud and causes the water molecules to clump and fall in more rain. So whenever you have this situation, you're going to be getting floods all over the planet. It's not just Australia that's flooding. You think of your news, go back a couple of years, they had floods in Italy, floods in Hungary, they had floods in China. We're getting floods. They've got a flood going on now somewhere. So this is something that you're finding all over the planet. So all of these things that are happening to us, they're not nice, but they're natural. And they are nothing to do with carbon dioxide. So what has been foisted on us is this, I've got a couple more minutes and I'm just going to finish in this because it's the most terrifying part of it. This, the United Nations has used this fear, this vile program of fear to control us with carbon dioxide. They're dragging huge amounts of money away from us with carbon credits. People like Al Gore and the Clintons and the Obamas and all of BlackRock and Vanguard make so much money out of carbon credits and out of getting in the mix of however the money is flowing through the planet. But they're forcing, you know, the Greens and the left, everyone who's left in the planet, and our own Liberal Party too. I mean, look at those guys, they must be looking at their untied shoelaces, wondering what the hell they need to do. You know, I wish they would just stand up and say, hang on, we need to look at the science, we need to understand it, and then make a decision. But we're getting all of these renewables creating our if they have their way, our sole source of electricity and energy for this country, and which will destroy us. It's impossible. Solar panels and wind farms, they won't do nuclear, of course, because that would solve all the problems. But the solar panels and the wind farms are only 30% efficient, even in our country with our sunlight and things like that. In Europe, you get things like the solar panels are only about 25% efficient because they have a lot less, you know, they get a lot more snow and things like that. So you get situations like in 2021 in February, they had shocking snowstorms in Texas when 702 people died because the panels were covered in snow and the wind turbines froze. And 702 people died and their cars were in their homes from cold. You know, I mean, that's just disgusting. But that's the future for the Northern Hemisphere. You've also got the situation, talk about batteries. There's only 13 million EVs running around the planet. There's 1.44 billion vehicles on this planet. There is not enough lithium in the ground to make batteries for all those cars. And even if there was, the batteries only last 8 to 10 years in a car. And it costs you $50,000 to replace them at today's cost. What's it going to cost you in 10 years for your Mercedes? Or are you going to throw it away? Your EV Mercedes, because there won't be any lithium to make the replacement battery. So, I mean, they are an absolute disaster. And as for batteries to back up storage from wind and solar, well, South Australia tried that. They spent $1 billion with Tesla for a big array of batteries. My son lives in Selix Beach in South Australia. And he laughed his head off the other day. They were having a blackout, so they switched their batteries on. They lasted 4 minutes. And they got their blackout. They had 4 minutes of power from a $1 billion array of batteries. So that ain't going to work. And then you've got the other horrible thing, and this is the worst thing of all, and this is where the story really gets tragic. You've got the solar panels, and I think to achieve even the 2035 values, we've got to be putting in 22,000 new solar panels every day. Those solar panels, which will only last between 15 and 20 years, A, they're made by Uyghur slave labor. The cobalt in the batteries is made through slave labor in Nigeria, as we all know. I'm sure you've seen that, which is terrible. But those solar panels are full of toxic, poisonous toxic materials, cadmium, tetrahydrochloride. So when they're at the end of their life, there is no plan. If you have solar panels on your roof, and I'm an architect, I'm putting them on all the time for my clients. When your solar panels are done, try and take them to the tip. They won't let you. There is no plan to get rid of solar panels because they are toxic. And you can't. If they bury them, they're just going to be leaching into the soil and they'll destroy the water table. So that's solar panels for you. Look, they're not a bad thing, solar panels, but they've got to find a way to package them up or destroy them like with nuclear waste. And as for the wind turbines, they are the most horrible things of all.
Yeah.
Not only do they contain isocyanates in all their blades, but they have this horrible thing called bisphenol A, which as the wind turbines spin around is worn off the blades by the rain and the hail or whatever is hitting the blades. And the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency in the USA, has calculated that 1 kilogram of bisphenol A makes 10 billion litres of water undrinkable and unsafe.
Holy shit.
And that's coming off everyone. And what about, I mean, I'm sure when it's been a big thing from our point of view, this 94 turbine wind farm up at Chulumbin, south of Ravenshoe, northern Queensland. The damage they're doing, 13,500 virgin hectares of rainforest are going to be utilised, with roads that are 70 metres wide. All the turbines are on the ridges, of course. Mm. So that will cause erosion off all the ridges. And the wildlife that has been destroyed. Turbines have been calculated to destroy 40,000 bats every year in Victoria. In America, the hoary bat, which is a vital bat for the ecology, is near extinction. And they are killing 128,000 of those bats every year.
Is your sound frequency?
Sorry?
Sound frequency?
No. What happens with the bats, and this is the terrible thing about them, they don't get hit by the blades. When the blades turn, there is a massive pressure drop on one side of the blades compared to the other. So as the bats fly through the blades, they don't get hit. But as they go to the back side of the blade, which has, or it might be the other way around, where they go from the back side to the front side of the blade, where there's a pressure drop, their lungs explode.
Oh.
And that kills them instantly. But you've got all the apex birds. They're chasing smaller birds like the bald-headed eagle, the symbol of the United States. It's nearly extinct now in about seven states in America. These are just birds getting hit by blades, I'm talking about, as well as all the poison in the water. And you've got the ones, those massive beasts, what have they got? 120 metre diameters or something that they're putting off the coasts of Nantucket and places like that on the east coast of America. And Biden has done all these sanctuaries all up the east coast of America for additional wind farms. And what they do is when they map these wind farms, they use what's called machine gun sonar. So they go out there with these boats which go bang, 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 bang in the water. Apparently it is so painful to the whales. And even when they stop doing that, the thrumming and the big thrumming of those enormous blades is affecting the sonar of the right whale and the humpback whale. They had 178 dead ones on the beach at Nantucket a little while then. So they're killing whales. So virtually, I mean, this whole push for renewable energy sounds fine, but number one, it will never give us the power. Do you know how much? We're paying, what, 23, 27 cents a kilowatt hour? Do you know how much it runs in Australia, how much it costs you to run a 500 megawatt, which is a normal size coal-fired power station? That's if, and all of them are, if your plant is already built, we won't put the cost of that in, you own the coal pit, which is right next door, so there's no transport, it costs to run for 1 kilowatt hour, which we pay 23 to 27 cents for, it costs that power plant 0.1%. Coal is so much cheaper. To build one of those 500 megawatt coal-fired power stations, costs between $1.5 billion. If you're going to do carbon capture and storage, which is bullshit, if you're going to do that, it might cost you as much as $3 million. To replace those megawatts with wind turbines, with the 50% wind turbines and 50% solar, is $8.8 billion. Now, there's $500 million our government puts out for every turbine built in Australia, which goes straight to China. And we pay $825 a kilowatt for the solar panels, which goes straight to China. At least in a coal-fired power station, all of that is ours. It stays here. We pay for it. It stays in Australia. and it's cheap to run. And I'd like you to know, that, and I'll finish on this, that the latest figures have just come out that our planet has greened in the last 20 years by over 15% in the last 20 years. Two reasons. One, less deforestation. We're getting better at that. Although tell that to the Germans, sorry we're in the German club, but they've cut down one quarter of the Black Forest to build wind turbines. One quarter. And which just disgusts me. I've been in the Black Forest, it is beautiful. They've chopped down one quarter of it to build these turbines, and they chopped up all that wood and put them in wood-fired power stations. But the planet, even with that, the planet has greened by 15%. Our deserts are shrinking because of the extra carbon dioxide that's on this planet. Carbon dioxide is a blessing. It is one of the three compounds on this planet which is essential for life. I could go into all the science of carbon dioxide and explain a lot more, but I don't have time now. But it is the most wonderful compound. It's a tiny amount. It's only a trace element. It's only 0.04% carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
If you take it away, it's goodbye fauna.
It is the food for every growing thing on the planet, and all the phytoplankton, in the oceans. Without carbon dioxide, our planet dies. In the last ice age, we got down to 160 parts per million. We're currently about 420 parts per million. At 140 parts per million, we're extinct. Because the colder the oceans get, the more they are able to absorb carbon dioxide. So if we have another ice age, we're going to have to be burning all the coal we can and all the limestone, because all the carbon dioxide is trapped in limestone. And we're going to have to be burning limestone to replenish the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Where's that original one? We're an absolute. We're at an absolute. Carbon dioxide is way too low. We should be at least up around 2,000 parts per million. We would have no deserts at 2,000 parts per million. We would be able to grow wheat in the middle of the Sahara Desert if we had 2,000 parts per million. Our Simpson Desert, the whole of what would happen to the middle of Australia? Already we have the potential to become the food bowl for the world. But imagine if with a bit more carbon dioxide, all of the deserts are shrinking because carbon dioxide is increasing. This lack of sunspot activity, if we get that for 100, 200, 400 years, you're going to be skiing in Bundaberg. I'll tell you what, it is going to be so bloody cold. The cloud seeding, all of that stuff, it will do nothing. These are massive systems which are controlling the temperature of our planet. This stuff I've been studying for 26 years. I know inside out, and I read everything I can on it. But the cloud, there's everything that's going on in this planet. We're in a really bad time. We have to fight all of them.
Absolutely.
From the vaccines, to whether it's the cloud seeding, to whether it's...
And they use the same strategy in every case.
It is to control us, and it's the worst thing is, and we're all going to have digital footprints. So unless you do the right thing, you will not be able to buy an airline ticket because you will have not clocked up enough carbon credits. That is in our future. And if anyone, please go and Google transhumanism and the WEF and what they're saying at Davos every year. It is terrifying.
But it's not going to matter then. One of us is going to survive out of 16. That's their numbers that they want to take.
That's what they want. Yeah. That's what Bill Gates is after. Anyway, look, thank you very much for listening.
Just a question, just
here. Oh, sorry.
Can you just tell me the name of the toxin that you said comes off the blades?
Bisphenol A. B-I-S-P-H-E-N-O-L. And then capital A is a separate.
1 liter of bisphenol renders what?
1 kilogram renders 10 billion liters
of water,
undrinkable and dangerous. And China, by the way, is, as we speak, building 279 new coal-fired power stations to add to their 1,118 that they already have. And what do you hear from the United Nations?
Nothing.
Zero.
I think we all need to thank David. Please don't go away, David.
Oh, thank you.